وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. Whenever we want to do something and organize something in our lives, make a plan or make an agenda, either for self-improvement or to organize something in terms of community or project, the worst thing that a person can do when planning and organizing is to list out the things that he wants to do and try to tackle them one by one. Such and this type of work never succeeds. And we see that when we want to do something, when you want to make a list of things that, listen, I want to do this, 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 that, these are my resolutions, these are the changes I want to bring about, these are the things I want to change, such a plan never works out. You can never work out on such a plan. The best way to deal with things is not to tackle them one by one or to create a plan where you have a list of things listed out, because when you have a list of things, when you try to do one of those things, you will see by the time you try to rectify it and you go on to the second thing, you'll be frustrated that the first thing isn't done yet. And this only goes on and makes us frustrated. The best way to deal with any type of thing is not to make a list of things out, but rather to see amongst that list of things that you have, what is that component, what is that item in that list that is so important that if you can handle that one key issue and that one key item on that list, then the rest of the things, well, many of the things in that list will be solved. This is a better way to organize oneself and to plan something. For example, New Year's comes around and you say that, you know what, these are the list of things I want to change in my life. And you write out a list of things. I want to do this, I want to do that, I want to do this. And now, if you start working on that list one by one, you will see that this sort of endeavor leads to frustration and you will never achieve goals and you'll never achieve that plan. Rather, when you look at that list, see what item in that list is so crucial, is so important that if I can tackle that one item, then many things in that list will be solved. This is the way that Islam has asked us to organize our lives. Not to go after a list of things, because if you go after a list of things, you'll be running around and you'll be frustrated. Neither does our logic allow us to do that, neither does our religion allow us or wants us to do that. What Islam wants us to do is to see what is that crucial component and that main issue that you need to tackle, and if you tackle that one issue, then you see many things in that list will be solved. As some examples I'll give you, and then we will go on from here. For example, when we come to, let's say, akhlaq and our ethics, we see that many things in our ethics, in our akhlaq, that we want to change in Islam. For example, we don't want to do ghibat. We don't want to lie. We don't want to do haram. We don't want to, for example, talk bad about others. Right? We don't want to say lies about others. So all of these things that we have, when you look at this list, you make out a list of things that you want to rectify in yourself. If you try to tackle that list one by one, and many of us have tried it many times over, what happens is that you go through one item and say, I will not do ghibah. Then you are trying not to do ghibah, not to do ghibah, and you think that you have a good control over yourself, of not doing ghibat. Now you move to the next item, not lying. Now by the time you move to the next item, not lying, boom, you come into a place where you hear ghibat or do ghibat, and then you find yourself doing it. Then what happens is that you become frustrated. Why can't I do that? Why can't I stop myself? For 2 weeks I didn't do it, why did I get myself into that? Either you go become a monk, you go in the mountains or do, just get away from everyone, or how do I tackle this problem? So now when we read the book of Akhlaq, and this is what's misleading about books of Akhlaq, when you read them, yes, they point out all the major sins. For example, you have a book called Major Sins. Now, you look at all those major sins and you see that, man, how many of those am I involved in, One way or the other, I'm involved in somewhere, right? And you try to solve one of them by yourself. When you try to avoid sins, when you try to get a control of your nafs and not doing sins, you will see that you end up doing them and still become part of doing something wrong. Then you become frustrated and you see that, why am I not able to do this? Well, here's the problem. We aren't handling it in the right way. Allah never asked us to run around and trying to avoid this, trying to avoid that, trying to avoid this, giving us a list of things that these are the things you need to do. Because Allah knows that if you try to do that, neither are you going to do it, and at the end you will become frustrated, and Allah's job is not to make us frustrated, Allah's job is to help us grow. So now, what does Allah do? Allah said, listen, yes, these are all major sins. These are all wrong things. These are all bad things. But in order to solve those bad things, in order to solve those wrong things and those sins, I'm going to give you a secret recipe. Just one thing. If you can handle that one thing, if you can do that right, then the rest of the things will be solved for you. That is the key component. Allah gave us a key component in terms of akhlaq. He says, in akhlaq there's one key component. Do this and the rest of your sins will be solved. The rest of the problems that you have will be solved. So now Allah, what is that key component in terms of akhlaq that we can do in order to solve the rest of our akhlaqi problems and issues that we have? So Allah says, listen, I'm going to give you this one thing. Take it. And if you can improve that, if you can get yourself better in that and make that strong, then the rest of the problems will be solved. What is that one issue? He said, As-salatu tanha anil fahsha'i wal munkar. Prayer is that which forbids you from evil. He says, prayer forbids you from evil. If you make namaz, if you make prayer, then that is going to forbid you from all evil, meaning that any type of evil, any type of sin cannot come close to you as long as your prayer is correct. Improve that, make that strong, everything else will come in place. Just that one thing, my friends. This is in terms of akhlaq I'm saying, right? We have had an Ayatollah Behjat who was a very well-known scholar who recently died. People used to ask him that, what is the best way to improve ourselves and to make ourselves stronger and better and closer to Allah? How do we get closer to Allah? And he always used to reply to them and say that, namaz awwale waqt, pray at the first time. And the people who were asking used to be scholars themselves, meaning ulama themselves. And they used to think that he's ignoring them. That's why he just wants to get rid of them. That's why he said that. Right? And, they were kind of upset. He could have, given us something more deeper than that. Something that's more like irfani, And this and that, trying to get, us to become something better. He said, what is that? Prayer? Of course we pray. We all pray. And a year later, they came back again. And again, they said, hey, listen, what is the best way to get closer to Allah? And a year later, his answer was the same. He says, pray at the first time. When time comes and pray. He said, but Agha Maulana, you said that last year and still there is no improvement. He said, that means that you haven't learned how to pray at the first time yet. You haven't learned it yet. Because Allah is not lying when He said, prayer is what forbids you from evil. If you're doing evil, if you're making mistakes, if you're doing sins, it means that there's something wrong in your prayer. That's why you are not improving. The jihad of trying to control your nafs, jihad of trying to make yourself better, jihad of trying to make your akhlaq better and to get rid of sins is not in fighting those sins, but in improving your prayer. That's where the jihad is. You improve here, then you will see the results there. So this is in akhlaq, a key component is what? Prayer. You do that right, everything else is solved. Let me give you another example. Say loud salawats. In terms of tarbiyat and training, for those who have children, right, in terms of them, let me give you an example so you understand it through there. Everyone wants to raise children that are good. No one wants to raise a children, raise children who are bad. Right? I mean, no one wants to say that, you know what, I'm going to raise a child who's bad, No one goes with the intention of that, right? Everyone wants to raise a child that is good. He's decent, he is well-behaved, and he makes them proud. That's the child they want to see, right? So now, when everyone wants to do that, now what happens is that how do you train such a child? Now of course, when you go and ask, for example, ulama to give speeches about training children, doing tarbiyat of children, you see there are tons of speeches you can listen to online and do things, and they will list out a list of things of you for you to do. Listen, do your child this, do this, do that, do this, do that. By the time you start doing that with your child, neither does your child improve, and he will get frustrated with you also as a parent. Right? And it doesn't work like that. Now, when you want to raise a child, when you look at the list of things, there has to be one thing that Allah gave, that if we can follow that one thing, then all the rest of these things will be solved and your children will become balanced and strong. What is that one thing in training that Islam gave us that we can utilize that one thing and you see that your children will grow up balanced and strong? What is that one thing? Well, that one thing, just one thing. If you can practice that one thing, everything else will be all right. Everything else will be alright in training your child. You'll see that, you'll see the results. Now what is that one thing, Maulana? Just one thing, that's it? That's all we have to do? Yes, that's all you have to do. Just do this one thing. So what is that? Very simple. In your house, if you want to raise your children balanced, if you want to raise them as mu'min and strong, then the best way to do it is very simple. All you need to do in your house is make an environment where the mother teaches the child that the father is the leader of the house, and the father teaches the children that the mother is the nucleus of the house. That's it. If the mother trains her children and says, listen to your father, he's the wali. And if the father tells the children that your mother is the love of the house, respect her, honor her. When you have an environment like that, then a child who's raised in that environment doesn't need to be taught much. Just being raised in that environment, he will learn what is good automatically. He will learn to be imbalanced automatically. Mistakes come when this environment is not found. And you see, most of the times when mistakes happen in households and raising children, it's because of this reason. A person comes to me and tells me that, my son got married last year and he wants to divorce his wife. And I know his son because I got him married last year. So I said, Maharaj, would you talk to him? I said, all right, let me go and talk to him. I said, you know, what's wrong, son? What happened? It's been only a year. I thought you were on the honeymoon. You messed up so fast, I didn't know that. I said, what's going on? He says, you know, Maharaj, you know, we just can't get along. We're not compatible. That's it. I can't take it anymore. That's it? He said, yeah, I can't take it anymore. All right. I looked at him, saw his expression, saw how he replied to me, understood the problem, came back to the father and said, well, you know, so he asked me, well, what happened? What do you think? He said, listen, let me tell you, let me ask you a question. Did you ever used to put down your wife in front of your children? When your children were young, did you ever... You used to, like, for example, ridicule her, put her down, tell her that, you know, you're nothing, you're stupid, you're dumb. Mona, what does that have to do with this? It's my child's marriage you're talking about. He said, that's the problem here. Your son never learned how to respect a wife. He never learned how to respect his wife. It's you who broke that respect and honor in her. See, if you had taught her to respect his mother, and if you had respected his mother in front of him, then he would also learn how to respect his wife. And to handle her, and to be patient with her. You see, this is the problem. A mother comes to me and says, you know, my girl doesn't do hijab. I says, so what? You know, many girls don't do hijab. What's wrong with that? No, but, you know, I'm a teacher in the madrasa. I teach Islamic studies. So that's the problem. You know? So, what's wrong again? My daughter doesn't do hijab. Or your daughter doesn't do hijab. Right? I said, you know, she was asking me, please advise her. I said, listen, I don't need to advise her. I already know what the problem is. There was the problem, Marana, you know, I want to fix this and this and that. I want to do this. All right, listen, tell me, do you know more about Islam than your husband? I knew her husband also. I mean, you're a madrasa teacher, you teach in the madrasa and this and that. I said, do you know more about Islam than your husband? She said, yes. Okay. Did you ever used to talk loud to him? You used to talk loud to him. You're upset at him because he doesn't know, and you know. You know more than he does. You used to talk loud to him, get upset at him in front of the children. He said, but Mona, what does that have to do with this? He said, that is why this is happening. She never learned that her father is the wali. There's a father who gives the orders. He has not learned how to listen to orders yet. That's where the problem comes in. The environment, if you want to raise children, then the raising children is, you know when? When you make this environment in the house. Where the wife is training the children that, listen, your father is the wali. And the father is training the children that your mother is the love of the house. When you have such an environment, then you see that is the key issue in raising children in an Islamic way. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala. So, I'm just giving some examples for you to how there are certain issues in Islam that are key issues. And if you can look at those key issues, the rest of the issues in your religion, in Islam, in every aspect of your life will be solved. Every aspect of your life has one issue that if you can solve that, that's it. That's how Islam wanted things to be organized. Now, if you understood that, now let me come to the subject. In our religion, you know, we all want to get better. We all want to become stronger. We all want to become a better Muslim, better mu'min, better Shia. We all want to become someone that the Imam can be proud of. If you don't, then this is not the majlis for you. Right? If you want to be, then We have to see, what is that issue that Allah gave to us? That in that issue, that one issue, if you solve that issue, then our deen, our religion will become better. What is that issue, my friends? This is such an important issue that if, you know, we understand that how much Allah loves this issue, how much Ahlul Bayt gave for this issue, how much Islam emphasized this issue, how much do the enemies of Islam have worked in order to depreciate this issue and degrade this issue in the eyes of the Muslim. Just that one issue. What is that one issue? That if we can understand it in the right way and practice it in the right way, then every aspect of our religion will become better. Every aspect of our deen will become stronger. That one issue that we have in Islam that is so important, that differentiates us from everyone else and from everything else. What is that thing that makes us better? What is that thing that makes us different from kuffar, from munafiq, from animals? What is that one thing, that relationship that we have with Allah that makes us Muslim and mu'min? What is that one thing, my friends? Is it Allah's mercy? Is it Allah's blessings? Is it Allah's book? Is it Ahlul Bayt? What is that one issue? Think about it. If it's Allah's mercy, then Allah has mercy on animals also. If it's Allah's blessing, then Allah also blesses kuffar also. Gives them blessings in ni'mah. You can't say they don't get blessings. They get from Allah also. Kuffar also get from them. Then what is that one thing that Allah has this relationship with us that only Allah gave to us? And He says, I consider you special because of this reason. Because of this one reason, because of this one issue, I consider you special. You are special to me. Not like animals. I don't treat them like that. Not like kuffar. I don't treat them like that. What is that one issue that makes us special to Allah? And Allah is saying that because of this reason, you are special to me. That's what I want to talk about in these next 8 days. That one issue. What is that one issue? And that one issue, my friends, listen to it carefully. Of course, I'll repeat it. That one issue that makes us special, that one issue that is so crucial that it, if we work on that one issue, everything else will change in our deen and the way we do things and make us a stronger mu'min. That one issue is called obligations. Taklif, the burden of obligation. That's it, my friends. The burden of obligation. This wajibat that we have. This amr and command of Allah is what makes us special. Different than everyone else. Really. And if we want to become better, and if we want to make our deen stronger, then this is what we need to make stronger. Obligation, you know, Allah has put us under obligation. He has obliged us. He has commanded us to do something. That's what makes a Muslim special. Different than animals, different than kuffar, different than everyone else. And it is because of the lack of understanding of obligations and wajibat that we are losing our deen. Because we don't understand it correctly, and our enemies have worked to make us lose respect of these obligations. Especially when we live in a place like America, where America teaches us, and it has instilled in us the ideology that, listen, obligations, you know, are not important. You do what you want. Don't be obliged to others. Do not be obliged to others. Do what you want. So we have this view of obligation that it's another obligation. It's a burden on us. Taklif. Taklif is a burden. But we need to have the right understanding of it. And I want to give this, you know, shed some light on this week that I'm here, so that we have a true understanding of what obligations are. So we truly understand that. My friends, what makes you better is different than what makes you feel better. Comprehend it very well, what I'm saying. What makes you better is different than what makes you feel better. Things that make you feel better are not necessarily things that which make you better. How long have I been speaking so far? Well, has it been half an hour yet already? 20 minutes, right? All right. Now everyone's been like quiet and this and that. And I'm speaking about obligations. Give me 5 minutes and I'll make you feel better. 5 minutes. I'll make you feel better. Right? And you'll feel good. You want to feel good? Yes? Alright, then send the salawats. A person came to the Prophet and he asked him, Man yuhasibu yawm al-qiyamah? Man yuhasibana yawm al-qiyamah? Who is going to take our accounts on the Day of Judgment? Who's going to account for our actions on the Day of Judgment? So the Prophet said, Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. Allah is going to take your account. Allah is the one who will be taking your accounts on the Day of Judgment. Now, because Allah is the most knowledgeable, the most well aware of what you do. See, I don't know what you have done, really. You know, if I want to judge you, I judge you by what I see. What I see is good, so I judge you like that. I don't know your inner secrets, your inner thoughts. Allah knows your inner thoughts also. Your inner secrets, what you're thinking in your mind. Whatever bad thoughts you have, if I get to know that, I would also put you in a red list, you know. But the fact is that Allah knows all your secrets, right? And everything. So if Allah is going to take account, it means that Allah is going to be very detailed in His justice. I mean, He'll look at every aspect of you. So that's going to be harder, right? If Allah takes your account. If I take your account, it will be easier because all I see is good. Yeah, when we make Salatul Mayyat on a dead body, so what do? Right, we say in that Allah, I don't know anything about him but good. That's all I know. I know the person is good. I met him at the masjid. I saw him doing good things. I never saw him doing bad. So if I have to judge him, I will say he's a good person. But Allah, you know all the secrets. You know all the bad things he has done, all the evil that he has perpetrated. So now if Allah does our justice, if Allah is going to be our judge, that's going to be harder. Understand it? So the man asked him, who is going to do our accounting on the Day of Judgment? And Rasulullah said, Allah is going to do your accounting. So then the man just pumped his fist in the air and said, Najawna, Najawna, Birabbil Kaaba. Oh, then I'm successful. I'm going to go to heaven then. Oh yeah, I'm going to go to heaven. The companions heard that and he said, what's wrong with you? What, you think that's easy like that? It's not like that. What do you think it is? It's not that easy. What do you think it is? Why? And they came to Rasulullah and said, is he right in saying that? And Rasulullah said, he has understood Allah very well. Allah is like that. Even though He knows every secret you have, but He's that merciful. You see? Allah knows how to win hearts. So a person who understands Allah, he is overwhelmed by His love. He's overwhelmed by His love. Rasulullah, once he was praying to Allah, and he says, Allah, the day of judgment, يَوْمَ تُبْلَى السَّرَائِرِ. It is a day in which all the secrets are going to be revealed. You will be standing in front of Allah naked. Everything exposed. Whatever evil thoughts you had exposed, in front of Him you'll stand. And when Allah will take accounting of you, you will be, there's nothing there to protect you. So Rasulullah said, Allah, that day of judgment is going to be a day when all the secrets inside the hearts will be revealed. So Allah, all I ask you, that my ummah, Allah, do their accounting in such a way that their honor and respect is not exposed or put down in front of other nations. In front of other nations. Other people will be there. So he said, Allah, my Muslims, those who believe in me, do not take their accounting in front of others where they will be exposed and they will be ashamed in front of others. You know what Allah replied to? You know, this dua of the Prophet? He says, Habibi, my love, Ana ar'afu ibadi minka. I love my creation more than you do. I will account, وَحَاسِبُهُمْ. I will account for your nation. Because you made this dua, I will account for your ummah in such a way, I will take them to one corner of the day, on the day of judgment, and I will take account of them, that even you will not know what they have done. Understand this, my friends. Look at this. This is how Allah is. I will make sure that I will not put them to shame in front of others. You see? Now, I have a list of these hadiths for you. And all of these hadiths make you feel better, warms you up. Alright? It warms you up. It makes you feel better. But my friends, understand this. These hadiths can make you feel better, but they will not make you better. They help you feel better. They don't make you better. They get you warmed enough so that you can do something good to be good. But they don't make you good. You see, now you have to decide, what do you want? You want to feel good, or you want to be good? You want to be good? Right? I mean, we need to decide this right now for the next 8 days that I'm here. And you want to feel good? I have a list of hadith I can go on and make you feel good for 10 days and go. But if you want to be good, then you need to decide right now. Otherwise, if I say these hadith, then it's like, for example, you heat up the oven, you make the oven hot, everything hot, but you don't cook anything in there. Right, so what do you want to do? You want to heat up the oven, or you want to actually cook something? You want to cook something, right? So the issue is, my friends, if you want to feel good, then yes, these things are there, and Allah and Ahlul Bayt know how to make us feel good and make us feel warm and get us close to them. They know that. Just speaking about Allah's love will make you feel better. Speaking about Ahlul Bayt will make you feel better. But what makes you better is not this. What makes you better is the obligations that Allah has given you. The burden that Allah has given you. To do that burden that He gave you, to listen to Him and to do what He says, this is what makes you better. This is what makes your character. This is what makes your personality better. This is what makes you a stronger person. Just let me ask you a question. You all believe in Allah? Yes or no? Is that a strong yes or?
Yes.
Say a strong yes.
Yes.
Yes? Okay. You all pray to Allah? Yes or no?
Yes.
You all have a relationship with Allah? Yes or no?
Yes.
Tell me. My question is this. How do you enjoy Allah's relationship? How do you enjoy His relationship? What pleasure, in what way do you get pleasure from this relationship that you have with Allah? I mean, this relationship we all have with that inner self, that we speak with Him, that we talk with Him, living our lives. How do you rejoice in His relationship? How do you find joy in His relationship? In Allah's relationship with you? Is it, do you find joy in His mercy? That Allah is so merciful to me. Do you find joy in His blessings? That Allah has blessed me so much. I love it when Allah blesses me. Do you find joy in His being? That He's so kind, His kindness, that He's so kind with me. How do you enjoy Allah's relationship? You need to look at it that way. See it that way. What makes this relationship tick in you? How do you rejoice in it, my friends? You know, when does Allah like you the most? If it's His mercy, then Allah shows mercy to dogs also. If it's blessings, Allah gives His blessings to kuffar also. Right? He gives His blessings to kuffar also. What makes you different? You know how Allah enjoys this relationship? You know, you should really take enjoyment of Allah's relationship. You know when? When Allah comes to you and embraces you and whispers in your ears that I love you. That's. When does that happen? In our dreams? No, it happens in real life. It happens in real life. You say, when does that happen, Lord? When does Allah come to us and embrace us and tells us, I love you? When does that happen? You see, that happens when Allah considers you good enough to order you to do something. To tell you to do something. Allah expresses His love to you when He makes something wajib on you. He says, I am making something wajib on you. I think you are better than others. That's why I'm making it wajib. If I make prayer wajib, it's because I made it wajib on you because I think you are better than others. Now I will see you pray. My friends, this is wajibat. This is Allah's way of expressing to us that He loves us. When Allah make prayers wajib, Allah is saying, I love you, that's why I'm giving you this wajib. I didn't give it to others. I didn't give it to animals, I give it to you. I give it to you. See, my friends, having the correct understanding of wajibat will truly make us understand that yes, it is through these wajibat that we become a person, that we become a human being, we become insan. Through these wajibat, through these obligations that Allah gave us. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. You know, is namaz shab or salatul layl, is it wajib or mustahab? What? Mustahab, good. It's not wajib, right? It's not wajib. It's mustahab. Have you ever Wondered why it's mustahab? Why it's not wajib? It's mustahab for us. Why it's not wajib? It's not wajib. It's mustahab. But it is wajib on Rasulullah. Because Allah is telling the Prophet that, listen, I love you a little bit more, that's why I'm making this wajib on you also. To us, we shouldn't be saying that, oh, alhamdulillah, it's not wajib. Actually, we will be crying that, Allah, why don't you consider us that good to make it wajib on us? Friends, wajib is something that is so much pleasurable, that if you understand that Ahlul Bayt, when they used to make a prayer, after the end of prayer, you would see this, their expression would turn from happiness to sadness. After they finish their prayer, every prayer you will see that they will become sad. And if you ask them, why are you sad? It's that they will say to you, because now there's nothing wajib for us to do anymore until the next prayer comes in. Meaning that we want to do something that Allah tells us. Allah, give us an order so that we can do it. We want to do this order. Give us an order. Give us a command. It is this command from Allah that makes us special, my friends, to Him. This order is from Allah that makes us a better person. And to do that order, this taklif, this wajibat, this obligation that we have. You know, if we understand this wajibat, inshallah, we will we'll go in details as to what these wajibat are and what do they mean, so that we have a good understanding of these obligations. But just to tell you, you know, even when you go to Karbala, you will see what does it mean to be commanded by someone. You see, before I say that, just give me, you know, I'll just explain to you a little bit something. You know, a person's identity is known through who commands him, who orders him. His identity is based on that. The idea of an identity of a person is based on the fact that whose laws is he under? If you are a citizen of the United States of America, you say that, I'm a citizen here. My identity is what? I'm a U.S. citizen. So what does that mean? It means that I am obliged to the Constitution of America. This is what's giving you an identity. This is what gives you an identity. Your identity is based on whose commands you listen to. Whose Constitution you are obliged to. This is your identity. Understand that. This is your identity. If you want an identity, ask anyone, who's our identity? This is my master. I listen to him. That's why when a mu'min is asked, what is your identity? It means that, listen, I have a Rabb I'm listening to. I take orders from someone. I'm not a nobody. If someone doesn't have an identity, if someone doesn't have a citizenship of any country, it means he's lost. People say, whoa, where do you belong to? I don't belong anywhere. You're lost then. You're nobody. You don't have an identity. The concept of identity is known through whose commands you follow. That's why when you are asked, what is your identity? I say, I'm a Muslim. What does that mean? I follow what Allah says. I am not someone who is not without a leader. I have someone who I take orders from. It gives a person an identity, my friend. It's obligation that gives you the identity of Islam. Without obligation, ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wa muhammadur rasulullah. Yes, you know, by word you're Muslim, but you don't take pride in the identity yet. What gives you the identity of a Muslim? It is these wajibat that gives you the identity of a Muslim. This obligation. This is what gives you identity of a Muslim. This is when you have someone you take orders from. This is something to be proud of. This is what wajibat are. Let's go to Karbala and see. When we go to Karbala, then we will see. What does it mean to take orders? You know, I give an example today, day in the speech, you know, I'll just give that example here. Imam Hussein told everyone to go back. The only person he didn't tell to go back, in fact, he wanted the person to stay, was Zainab. And he told his sister, stay with me. Stay with me. Imagine this. When, you know, when he told the companions to go back, you know how saddened they felt? How grieved they felt? And said, meaning that you want us to be away from your command? Not to be under, I mean, we cannot even imagine us being away from your command. We want to be under your command. Tell us something to do. You know, they felt very lonely when Imam Hussein said that. When Imam Hussein told them, go back, they felt very lonely there. Hussein, if we don't have you to listen to us, then, you know, we won't be complete. We are complete because of you, because we follow you. We are whole because we follow you. This is why we are complete. And when Hussein gave the command to Zainab that Zainab stay with me, you know with what pride Zainab took that command? I mean, imagine how she felt that Hussein is telling me to do something. I'm taking orders from Hussein. I mean, this is, my friends, this is the way. This is how you take orders. This is what it feels like to take orders. Commands are like this. When Allah tells you to do something, it means that Allah, you told me to do that. You want me to do that. You know, this is how we feel, my friends. This is the pleasure we get from following the commands of Allah in Ahlul Bayt. There's a pleasure in that we need to feel. Pleasure in that we need to feel. When Imam Hussein gave the command, I mean, it's easy to listen to Imam Hussein. Granted, I can say this much, my friend. It's easy to listen to Imam Hussein, to give ourselves up for Imam Hussein. Because Imam Hussein is like that. You know, he is like that. He's so giving, you know, that no matter what kind and what type of sacrifice we do for him, he will do more for us. He does more for us. And it's really hard to imagine that, but really, I want you to think about this, really. How much Imam Hussein does? Yes, you know, if Imam Hussein tells us to do something, how easy it is for us to do it. If we can imagine that about Allah, it's 10 times more, 100 times more, 1,000 times more. But if Imam Hussein asks us to do something, then why wouldn't we do it? Imam Hussein is that kind. He is that good. He is that good. You know, let me give an example, and inshallah we will end it here today. You know, in the army of Imam Hussein, there were a few people, not a lot of people in the army of Imam Hussein. You know, the people that we are more knowing of are the people who were the companions of Imam Hussein. Habib ibn Mazahir, Muslim ibn Usaja, Zuhair ibn Qayn. These are like great companions, great people who had personalities, who had great characters. That's what they were. You know, let me give an example of someone. You know, one of these companions had a Turkish slave. One of his companions had a Turkish slave. This Turkish slave was a nobody. He was in the camp, but no one knew him. No one talked to him. He used to listen to everything. He used to be there in all the meetings and this and that. But he's someone you sit on the side. No one cares about him. He's just a slave. He's just a slave. And, you know, he loved Imam Hussein. He loved Imam Hussein. He saw his master loving Imam Hussein. And he also loved Imam Hussein. And he cared for Imam Hussein. He understood that Imam Hussein is a very kind person. He's a very generous person. And in the battle of Ashura, this slave, this Turkish slave, was fighting in one corner of the battlefield. And he was just fighting, and he's saying that I'm doing this for Hussein. Let me do this for Hussein. And if I die here, I will die for him. I will just die for him here. And he was fighting, and he got injured, and he fell on the ground. He fell on the ground, and he had a fatal injury. He was dying from that injury. He fell on the ground. And he said, you know what? Everyone who fell down to the ground, they called Imam Hussein, As-salamu alayka ya Aba Abdullah. And Imam Hussain would go to them. He said, but I'm just a lowly slave. Who cares about me? Who cares about me? I'm just dying here on the side of this battlefield. Let me just die over here. I don't want to bother Hussain. I'm just a low person. If I call Hussain, he will be bothered to answer me. Let me not even bother him that way. So in a very low voice, he said, As-salamu alayka ya Aba Abdullah. As-salamu alayka ya Aba Abdullah, he said. And he was just dying, closed his eyes and trying, he was going into unconsciousness. He was going into unconsciousness, and that person was lying there in the middle of nowhere, and he's thinking that no one cares about him. Who am I to care about? I'm just a lowly slave. I'm not even a person. I'm not even a person who can be equal to these great people who are here. But after a while, he felt a shade, a cool shade on his face, and it was, the shade was blocking the sun from him. He opened his eyes, and he saw that Imam Hussain is on top of him. Imam Hussain is on top of him, and Imam Hussain is looking down at his face, and he says, Mawla, why did you come to me? I'm just a lowly slave here. I'm just a lowly slave here. Who am I that you came to me? And Mawla is saying, you called me and I will not come. No, I will give back to everyone. I give back to everyone more than I take from them. You don't know what kind of a master I am, what kind of a leader I am. My generosity is that I don't owe anyone, I don't remain indebted to anyone. He came to this lonely slave, and this slave now cries and looks at Imam Hussain. And so Imam Hussain came to me, and he wept for me. He wept for me. Imam Hussain is saying, I don't remain indebted to anyone. Hussain, it is true that Imam Hussain never was indebted to anyone. But if there's one person Imam Hussain is indebted to, and he can never pay back, and that is his sister Zainab al-Kubra. Hussain has told Zainab that, Zainab, I can pay back everyone, but Zainab, you, I cannot pay back Zainab. I will always owe you, Zainab. سيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون. يا محمود بحك محمد، يا الله بحك يا علي، يا فاطر السماوات بحك فاطمة، يا محسن بحك يا سجان قديم الأحسان بحك يا حسين. Oh Allah, give us the tawfiq to be on the right path, give us the wisdom to understand your guidance, haste to the reappearance of your Imam. Make us his helper when he comes. وآخر الدعوان الحمد لله رب العالمين. يا حسين.